listeners, you're back on the air with Biz Culture Matters. Zach Gandra here. Steve Gandra with us. Hey, Steve.
Good afternoon, listeners.
Yeah, and as always, we're on Clay 1180, Tacoma's Conversation Station. We're excited to be here. If you're listening via podcast, we're stoked to have you as well. Just a quick reminder, you can look at us up on excellentcultures.com, and we have updated blogs regularly. We have all of our updated podcast content on there. And then throughout the show today, if you're listening and you're like, I need to have a conversation with these guys, I have a couple of questions that I want answered, you can email us right away at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com.
You're going to have a lot of questions for our guest today.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of questions for our guest today. Steve, you want to just say hello and introduce our guest
today? Yeah, hey, our guest today is Dr. Joe Castleberry, who is the president of Northwest University right here in the Kirkland, Washington area. And I've known Joe for a while, but not too long ago, we had a serendipitous moment when I was sitting in his conference room, because we do a business leaders forum together, and overheard him talking about how they just finished their accreditation and how the accreditors, the folks who come in and tell universities how good or not good they are, were just raving about the engagement and the satisfaction of his workforce and his employees. And universities are like any other organization. There are lots of folks, and you know, you've listened to this show enough by now to know that the Gallup poll tells us that 71% of our North American workers are effectively disengaged in their jobs. And anytime I can find a leader anywhere that has a statistic that flies in the face of that 71% of disengagement, we want to have them on the show so that they can give us their secret sauce. Joe, are you ready for this?
Yeah, all ready.
So give us some background on Northwest University. I know you wear three hats. I mean, you're a university president, you're an author, and you know, you're a speaker, and you preach in churches. You do a lot of extra stuff. Tell us some about your work at the university, what you're going through, what you've gone through, and you know, in all of the various hats you're wearing these days as an author, a university president, a business leader, and a speaker.
Well, I'm having the time of my life, Steve. I've prepared all my life for this moment. I knew pretty early in life that I wanted to be the pastor of a church. I knew that I wanted to be a missionary in Latin America. I knew that I wanted to be a college professor. And by 21, I knew that I had a sense of calling on my life to be a college president. So this is the time where all the things I've ever done in my life come together in one place at one time, and it's an exciting period. You know, life really does begin at 50.
Well, today, as you know, our show is about ethics, values, and employee engagement. But after hearing what you just said, we're going to do another series on finding your sweet spot in life, and we're definitely going to have you back for that one.
Sounds good to me. Well, Northwest is an interesting place. We're almost 80 years old. Next year, we'll celebrate our 80th anniversary. We were founded in Seattle as a Bible training institute in 1934. Now, that's the very bottom of the Great Depression. And our founders were humble people. The founder of the school was an immigrant from Norway. He had a very heavy accent. He didn't have a formal education of his own, but he was a very smart man. And he had a great dream of starting with a Bible Institute that would train ministers. Churches were growing, beginning to grow very rapidly in the Northwest at that time, and there was a great sense of need for more workers for churches. But he began that Bible Institute with a vision to found a comprehensive college that would offer training in lots of different disciplines like nursing and education and music and all kinds of other fields. But they began as a Bible Institute, and you know, with World War II and the GI Bill, many, many thousands of Americans started going to colleges. Schools like Northwest began to grow. The school was doing great, and then I-5 went right through the middle of Seattle and right through the middle of their campus.
Wow.
So they had to move out of Seattle and found a beautiful spot over in Kirkland, overlooking Lake Washington. So we have beautiful views of the lake and the mountain there. It's an amazing spot. You know, they didn't have any money. They'd been struggling for years. But the reality was that they got a big break when the federal government sold them 24 acres of prime property for $1.
Wow.
So we established ourselves in Kirkland in 1959 and started a junior college in 1962. Continued to develop. And in 1984, we offered our first major outside of the area of church ministry by adding an education major. And then they began a business major in 1991. But the school was still essentially a Bible college. In 1998, Don Argue came to the school, having had a couple of other presidencies before he came, a very talented person, and he had a vision to turn that small college into a comprehensive university and began working on that. And the school grew very rapidly. We've had record enrollments in 14 of the last 15 years. There was massive change in the culture and in the mission of the school. Today, we're a comprehensive university offering 60 different degree programs and 12 graduate programs, and really about as academically diverse as your, say, regional state universities.
Wow.
So it's really been quite an advancement in the last 15 years. So I came to Northwest 6 years ago, and the college had, we had three graduate programs then, and we had fully committed to the process of being a comprehensive university. But in the process of all that, had suffered a great deal of culture loss and unity. You know, when you're a single-purpose institution only doing one thing, everybody's pretty much on board. But when you diversify as rapidly as we did, it can create a lot of confusion and an unhappiness in the workforce. So we started getting some really negative workplace satisfaction results in the workplace surveys that we were carrying out. And so when I came in, I had an institution that was moving forward, but had a serious problem of workplace morale and satisfaction. So that was the key job I needed to accomplish when I came in, was to turn the workplace culture around.
What were some of the things that were showing up?
People were, you know, they didn't feel like they had a voice. People felt like they didn't matter. A lot of decisions had been made hierarchically, because that's the way you make fast change. unless you've got an incredible culture of trust, you know, if you want to make fast changes, often you make them in a fairly hierarchical way. And I think there was a lot of feeling that the administration wouldn't listen to the employees, that's probably the largest thing. There are all kinds of other kinds of distrust that were at work. You know, I'm sure some of it was deserved and some of it wasn't deserved. The employees are never totally wrong, you know?
Right.
It's easy for the bosses to look at employees and resent the fact that they're not just anxious to jump on the bandwagon anytime we want to make changes or do something new. But the employees, there's always something right about their position. And so there was a very, there was a strong separation at that time between administration and faculty, administration and staff and faculty. And the one thing we always had going well was an awesome student body. We draw the most amazing students at Northwest, but everybody loved the students. But, you know, there were times there when the relationships among employees were not too strong.
So, Joe, when you first recognized this as a leader, when you first recognized that folks were disengaging, for lack of a better way to describe it, you know, what actions did you take? I mean, what went through your mind? What did you say? What did you do? What started making a difference?
One of the first things I did was sit down with a person who's really a legend in the HR field, and I'm not going to say his name, but I sat down and we talked about the survey results that we had for the institution, and he told me how bad it was. And I said, well, what do I do? And he looked at me and he said, Joe, to tell you the truth, I have no idea. This is really bad.
Well, that's great. Your HR expert tells you that he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do either. But what I do understand and have always believed in is that people are people have real worth and dignity. And you know, I worked as a missionary in Latin America for 20 years, and one of the things that I learned from Latino culture was the inviolable dignity of every person. And so, you know, I began to try to look for ways to honor people and to increase their sense of dignity in their work by being more responsive and listening. And I'll tell you the truth, Steve, we didn't make a lot of progress the first 4 years.
Really?
Matter of fact, right in the middle of that, or right at the beginning of my time there, the economy collapsed on us. And well, we went through some real financial distress. And so in the middle of financial distress, I mean, I'd read The Speed of Trust, you know, the Stephen M. Covey book, and I knew that I had to create trust in the workplace or we weren't going to be able to do what we needed to do. But, man, you know, when you've got financial problems and you're cutting budgets and all that kind of stuff, it's not a prime environment for building trust. So the first 4 years, it was rugged. It was not, we didn't see immediate results, not by any stretch.
So in the tough years, you know, it's tough enough to have to re-engage people and create conversations and build trust when you're just coming through a transition from, you know, a small Bible college into a, you know, multifaceted university, you know, let alone have the economy go south on you. What were some of the obstacles that you ran into when you actually went out and started trying to get people to talk to you?
I mean, we're gonna take a break right now, but we're gonna go into that in the next section, the obstacles faced in the Northwest University culture change. We'll be right back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We have Joseph Castleberry on the phone right now, just going into that next question, Steve, that phase of challenges.
Yeah, we were talking to Joe about the transition that took place at Northwest University, and especially the transition in his workforce from what the Gallup people with their survey today would call very disengaged to what now is extremely engaged and having gone through a big transition in leadership, a transition in mission and vision, but then a tough economy. Joe, what did you run into? What did you do?
Well, again, I think that the biggest obstacle we faced was the lack of trust that we had towards each other. And so, you know, when people don't trust each other, they're calling for each other's head and that kind of thing. And, you know, I decided when I went in that I could go in and get rid of a lot of people. That was an option. So a lot of people were calling for that. But I, you know, when you get the axe out, you never know whose blood's going to be on it.
Yeah, it could be your own.
Well, absolutely.
It could be your own.
You don't want that. But, you know, I tried to go at it in a way that would give people a chance to redeem themselves. because I really do believe in people. I believe in everybody's dignity. I believe that people are good, and I believe if you give people the right enough chances, you know, they may get it right. And sometimes, if they don't take advantage of that, you've got to go ahead and make a decision, obviously. But I believe in giving people a chance.
Yeah, for sure. And for sure.
So, you know, the beginning of our improvement, and I don't want to suggest that we have arrived in Shangri-La and we've got a perfect environment and all of that, but I think everyone agrees that there's been real change. One of the first things that we did that began to send us in the right direction was we wrote a new mission statement for the university. And we had a strong vision statement. The vision statement of the college says, carry the call. That's the slogan that expresses our vision. And that vision for the university is that every single one of our people has a unique calling for their life. And as a Christian institution, we believe that God calls people to specific functions, some to church ministry, others to business, others to nursing and medicine and others to law and others to other fields, of course, and that all of those callings are sacred and are important. And in, even outside of Christian circles and secular settings, that issue, that sense of vocation and calling has become part of our business literature and canon. But we really believe in that our people have a unique purpose for their life, and that our vision as an institution is to train them to send them out in the world and see them operating in their area of gifting and in their area of purpose. And that's a very exciting thing to think about. All these wonderful young people that come to us, the investment we make in their lives, and then seeing them graduate and go out in the world and do great things. So our vision statement was very clear, but our mission statement was too old, and nobody really had any sense of property in it. Nobody really felt like they owned it. And so we began a year-long process of listening to the community and asking them questions about mission. We got all of the documents that had expressed mission over 75 years of the school's history, and we picked out mission statements from those documents, and then we fed them back to the community in a survey instrument to see which ones of those mission ideas were still important to the community. We just had feedback loop after feedback loop. And, you know, a year, I wasn't quite ready to call the process after a year, so we continued another 6 months. We took 18 months of talking to each other and listening to each other to finally come up with a mission statement. And when we got it right, it created a lot of buy-in. It created a lot of unity around that statement. That statement says this: we, the people of Northwest University, carry the call of God by continually building a learning community dedicated to spiritual vitality, academic excellence, and empowered engagement with human need. Once we had written that statement, people just bought into it, and the different schools of the university began to think of their work in terms of that final outcome of empowered engagement with human need. The business people began to think more of business as something that they do to meet human need. The nursing people started thinking of nursing as in that light of the meeting of human need. Same thing with education and church ministry and psychology and pre-medicine and all of those fields. All of the different programs at the university began to focus on that concept that we were empowering people spiritually, empowering them with knowledge, and then sending them out into the world to make a difference and to fulfill human needs around the world, and by doing that, fulfill the mission of God. So the operative idea in that mission statement is that phrase, learning community. We're continually building a learning community. And embedded in that phrase is some of Peter Senge's ideas about the learning organization. That we have to be an organization that is constantly learning. I mean, the world's changing so fast, and even though we were changing really fast as a university, you know, we're just barely keeping up with changes on the outside, if not falling behind. So, that's an important part of what we think of in being a learning community. But that word community is different than the word organization, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, Joe, as I'm listening to you, you know, we're culture guys, as you know, so we're always trying to pick out, you know, what are the best practices that, you know, this leader has deployed that, you know, are really working and, you know, really producing. And then, you know, look for, you know, what are the excuses that others could use that would make it such that we can't do this, you know, that only works for Joe. And one of the things that, you know, I hear you saying is, okay, you know, you're talking about people's purposes and their callings and their directions and their individual missions in life. And, you know, if I was a cynic, I would say, well, that's easy to do. You're a faith-based, you know, institution and, you know, and it's all about your faith. But I've worked around enough faith-based institutions to know that you can have a great faith-based institution with a really terrible culture where people don't feel comfortable talking to the boss about what they really think and how they really feel. I mean, we interviewed a great leader from Toyota 2 weeks ago, Jack Hollis, and he gave us, you know, his three danger signs of a bad culture. You know, the last one being when people are afraid to tell you what they really think or share their opinions, or they delay telling you, you know, what they really think or sharing their opinions. And it sounds like, you know, you just went all out for 18 months to find every way you possibly could to get people to share their thoughts, their opinions, their ideas, the good, the bad, and the ugly of Northwest University. To me, anybody could do that if they had the heart and the staying power that you did.
Well, we really were committed to listening to people and to helping them feel that they had been listened to. This process in itself was not enough, but it did crystallize in that concept of the learning community, and that became a really important concept for us. As we move forward, it's interesting. The Accrediting Association changed the way colleges are accredited, and we had to define four themes that we would use as the sort of focal points for our accreditation process. The things that we would be held accountable to, because that's really what accreditation agencies do. They're not going to tell you what you have to accomplish. They hold you accountable to accomplishing the things that you've set out to do, because schools are so different from one to the other. If you are keeping your promises and accomplishing what you set out to do, then you're a solid organization. And so we picked four themes to be evaluated on, and one of them was learning community. Another one was spiritual vitality. Another one was academic excellence. And the fourth was empowered engagement. And when we chose learning community to be an issue that we were going to be evaluated on, that was a gutsy move because we knew that when accreditation came around, it was very likely that we would only have negative data to show them. And because of the workplace surveys being a couple of years old by the time the accreditation visit happened, our quantitative data showed us not being a happy workplace. But over the last 2 years, we've had an amazing turnaround. And so that the quantitative data wasn't showing what was actually happening on the ground. It was funny, the first thing that accreditors asked us when the head of the team came to my office was why we had chosen, that we had flunked ourselves on that theme of learning community. We had come in under the 4-point scale, and we had graded ourselves just under 3 using the quantitative measures that we had. And they were impressed that we had chosen to be evaluated on something that was a weak point for us.
Okay. So hold on just a second, because we want to definitely take this one deeper. The context of, you know, your decision, your desire to want to become vulnerable and, you know, open your shirt, so to speak, and say, okay, here's where we're weak, throw daggers at us, you know, let us have it. Most leaders would want to duck that one and put it in the back room somewhere. You know, what caused you to jump out there and say, let's take on and, you know, become very honest about where we're weak.
We're going to take a break, and when we get back from the commercial, Joe's going to share why they opened their shirt, according to how Steve ordered.
In Japan, they say open kimono.
Open kimono.
Yeah, I'm in a Toyota last week.
All right, Clay 1180, your conversation station. Biz Culture Matters. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
And we're back with Joseph Castleberry of Northwest University. We were just going into their years of data that they had gathered on the culture and what was going on there, and then into the transition and the change and the transparency. Go ahead, Steve.
So,
back to the open shirt, open kimono.
Yeah, so Dr. Castleberry, tell us what would cause someone of your expertise and background and experience to ever do something as stupid as tell everybody what your weakness was and ask them to pile on.
I want to make clear, we didn't just have 1 year of bad quantitative data. We had many years of bad data.
Many years.
It wasn't bad data. It was good data, but it was negative data.
Yeah. It's good to know how negative it is.
Right. It wasn't some, the bad report wasn't some fluke. It was a longstanding pattern of workplace dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
And the reason we chose this as a theme to be evaluated on was because the integrity of our enterprise was at stake. We're putting ourselves out as a Christian university dedicated to a moral position and an ethical position and a spiritual position, and yet our internal culture was denying the validity of our profession. And that is just not... it's not a position you can live with. You can't stay there. So really, the integrity of our institution was at stake. We had to make it better. We didn't have a choice of ignoring this, and by holding ourselves accountable to it in the accreditation process, that really meant that it would be front and center, and we would not be able to run away from it. We would have to face up to our weaknesses. And you know, you just don't get better at things unless you're willing to face them.
Yeah, very well said, Joe. Very well said. You know, we are going to ask you a question that you already answered. Basically, you know, what your vision for a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement was. And it sounds like your first and foremost is all about having integrity, telling the truth, and being transparent in terms of what's really going on.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't go into this kind of work. I mean, you don't go into the nonprofit work, to educational work, with a cynical attitude. If you do, you're dead.
But many in your field have. So
students can smell it a mile away.
They can. Yeah, they can. They can.
Yeah.
They certainly can. So, Joe, tell us. You know, give our listeners some input, some advice on, what are some of the trouble signs? And now that you've got things moving in the right direction, and you've just gotten a great report back from the accreditors, and obviously you're not there, you never get there. But yeah. What advice can you...
Let me say something about that.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Let me interrupt you there.
No, go ahead.
I was so proud of our people. In all of the meetings that the accreditors had with people across the institution, the employees just shined, and they talked about how the institution had changed and how much more engaged they felt at work. I mean, one of the key opinion leaders in the university, who in the past has been vocal about not being engaged and not trusting, made an amazing declaration of trust and engagement in front of the creditors, and it's obvious that he meant it. But it's not just one person. It was people across the institution who were expressing their sense of faith in the operation and their sense of trust in the administration and that things were turning around and we're doing better. It's funny, even in accreditation reviews where the vitality of the institution's at stake, often employees they'll let them know exactly what's wrong.
Sure.
It's not like the creditors are in town, we got to be good, everybody shut up, don't tell them how bad it is. Often the most disaffected people, the most unhappy people, will really take the opportunity to tee off in those environments. And our people, they really shined. I mean, they were just extremely hopeful and positive in the way that they dealt with the creditors. And so they commended us on the community that we're building there. And it's a great thing. And we're not declaring victory. We think that the battle for trust and for integrity is a battle you fight every day. But we're headed in the right direction, and our people are happier, and it's a great thing.
Yeah, that's so great to hear. So, Joe, how many employees at Northwest University these days? How big is your staff?
Well, about 200 full-timers and another couple hundred of part-timers.
Okay, and then some of these are teachers and instructors, and some are support staff and folks that work in all different, just like any organization, all different shapes and sizes and scopes and job descriptions and everything else.
All of that, but what's unique about it is that you're dealing with an extremely well-educated workforce. The average population, only 3% of the whole population has doctoral degrees, and it's a lot higher at a university.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty well-educated workforce, and so people think their opinions matter, and they think they've got something to say. And I think one of the things that I've learned about all this is that if people don't have to have their way if they have their say. If people feel like they've been heard, they've been listened to, they will go along if their opinion doesn't win the day. But they have to at least feel that their opinion has been taken seriously and that they've been taken seriously, especially at a university where people are smart, People are smart everywhere, but these folks have credentials to prove it, and you've got to take them seriously.
Yeah, very well said. So we're going to tweet you on that one. People don't have to have their way if they have their say. How truthful is that in just, a few words? So you're out on the road giving a speaking engagement, and the subject is, to your colleagues, other CEOs and business leaders and university presidents, and the subject is, what are the trouble signs of a culture that's getting derailed, that's going, sideways, that's going, backwards? How do you know that it's time to dig in and start this communication exercise that you just completed? What do you see? What can you tell them, Joe, as some of the trouble signs to watch for?
One of the trouble signs is that there is lots of resistance when you want to do something new. Because that's a telltale sign that there's a lack of trust in the organization. When you're getting real pushback to even small things that you want to do to change things, that's pretty good evidence that folks don't trust you.
So the higher the resistance to change, the lower the trust.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Another good piece of information. Anything else that you would look for as, trouble signs that you could tell leaders of? We now know that if our people are resisting, passionately resisting even the smallest changes, that, there's a trust problem. We need to pay attention to the culture. Anything else, any other trouble signs that you can think of that they should watch for?
Well, I think you can look at wellness issues sometimes as a barometer of that. You know, if you're seeing you've got high absenteeism, you see that people are they're not healthy. You see you got a really heavy load at the counseling center. Those kind of things. That's pretty good evidence that people are not enjoying their work.
Yeah, very, very well said.
A bad workplace can make people sick.
Yeah, it sure can. Another barometer. What's interesting, we did a culture transformation project for a Caterpillar facility in Middle America a few years ago, and the CEO of this, you know, they probably had 5,000 to 10,000 employees, big place, and he had shared with us that the local doctor ran into him on the golf course and told him that he knew that they'd made a positive difference in their culture because the percentage of workers coming in asking the doctor to give him a fake excuse had gone down dramatically. It had gone down dramatically. So, I mean, you're so true. You know, you're so right on, you know, with that one. So, Joe, tell us, you know, we talked about this Gallup poll of disengaged workers in America. Now's your chance to get on your soapbox and tell leaders what they can do to turn this engagement thing around. I mean, what can we tell leaders to turn this engagement thing around? You know, what a huge slap in the face for America to have a noteworthy poll like Gallup tell us that 71% of our workforce is disengaged. How can we turn this around?
Well, you start with your own heart. If you know that you don't care about your employees, you're not interested in them and people, you don't care that they're fulfilling their purpose, that they're fulfilled in their work, that they're happy in their workplace, if you don't care, you're never going to get it right. So there's an old saying that says 90% of success is sincerity. Once you can fake that, you've got it made. It's absolutely not true. You know, if you don't get the sincerity part down, you're never going to make it.
Yeah.
Your people are going to be unhappy. So first of all, you got to really care about them. And second, you've got to find ways of communicating that you do care about them as people. The word exploit has two different meanings. You know, on one sense, exploit means to use something productively. In another sense, it means to take undue advantage of people.
Mm-hmm.
If you're exploiting your workers in that negative sense, that you're just taking advantage of them, that they need a job, they need to work, you know, they're not going to give you their best. If you can engage people with a sense of the moral value of work, that their work really matters, that they matter, that they're doing something that's changing the world. They're doing something that's worth doing. I mean, I think Toyota believes that.
Yes, they do.
I think Toyota believes that providing automobiles for people is crucial for making the world work, and that people's lives are improved when they've got a dependable vehicle. And it's amazing how important automobiles are for the functioning of North American society. They have an incredibly important role to play. Their workers ought to feel good about making those cars. And I'm sitting in a Toyota Avalon right now. I love this car. This car makes my life better. If employees at Toyota feel that their work is making people's lives better, there's a sense of moral purpose and meaning in that brings great satisfaction. Human beings can never ignore the morality question without paying a great price.
That's huge. We're going to head into a break in our last segment with Joseph Castleberry, president of Northwest University. Excellent stuff there, Joe. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
So, Joe, before the break, you were talking to us about, you know, what happens when you ignore the moral question. And, you know, just about every enlightened business leader today probably gets that. And where we see the breakdown, though, is between the getting it and the doing it would be a good way, I think, to describe it. And, you know, love your comments about you have to check your own heart first and find out if you really care, because if you don't, they'll know. But what I find so much is there are, you know, so many, you know, potentially great business leaders that get stuck at good or less than good because they don't know how to communicate it. You know, maybe they do care, but they have a hard time, you know, transmitting it, or, you know, maybe they don't care enough, or they're just so busy fighting alligators and fires and surviving in their business that they never really take the time or feel they can take the time to go out and do the kind of engaged communication that you've done, and that is, you know, obviously by the statement of your creditors is paying off for you. What advice would you have to those guys and gals that they get the moral question? They've got good individual values, but they're having a hard time, you know, connecting with the people like you were when, you know, maybe when you first got started?
Yeah. Well, 2 years ago, we started the school year off with the annual faculty meeting, and then we had an annual, we called a special staff meeting right afterwards, and rolled out a 7-point program of change. We had been through a process the year before that we were calling a reconciliation process, in which we worked real hard to address the issues of difference among us and difference of opinion and ways that people had hurt other people's feelings and that kind of thing. And after this year of reconciliation, we developed. Over the course of that year, we developed a document that we called the Community Covenant to give guidelines to each other about how we ought to communicate with each other at all different levels of the institution. And when in the meeting at which we rolled that Community Covenant out, I announced a 7-point series of changes in the way administration was going to operate in the future. And I looked at the dimensions of culture and tried to come up with everything from rituals to language to heroes to all kinds of different elements of culture, and address the cultural issues in terms of what a culture is, and trying to build a hardwired process of change that would force us to do things differently. Good intentions never lead to better communication. Only concerted actions do. So we thought hard about how are we going to communicate our sincerity and our commitment to this change, and came up with a plan and then carried that plan out. I think it had some effect.
Tell us that one again. Good intentions never lead to better communication, only concerted actions. Is that what you said?
That's what I said, yes.
Do you just come up with all these pithy little tweets yourself?
Oh, well, I guess so. I'm glad you like them.
Well, we know you're an author, and you've written a number of books, so, you know, that one's a title there, Joe. I mean, that's the title.
This latest book really does address this issue. It's called Your Deepest Dream, and the book says that every person has a deep dream inside of them that is the most perfect expression of their identity. But the only way you can really discover that deep dream is to become a deep person. And you become a deep person by building a strong moral center. And so the book is about how you go about building that strong moral center in life out of which your deepest aspirations can surface and become not just tacit, but something that's explicit and something that you can take concrete steps towards realizing. I can't stress it enough. You got to be right if you want to do right.
Well, I've been working in your book, and for our listeners, this is not a book for someone who is passive about improvement. This is a book for someone who is serious about being all that they can be in life. And, you know, Joe gives you the tactics and the techniques to get after it. So can they get the book? Where do they get it? Amazon?
Oh, yeah, Amazon.com. It's in all the Christian bookstores in the country. It hasn't hit secular bookstores yet.
So it's on Amazon. Tell us the name of the book again.
Yeah, Your Deepest Dream.
Your Deepest Dream by Dr. Joseph Castleberry. Get it. I mean, Excellent Cultures gives it 5 stars if you're serious about being all that you can be.
You can get it at josephcastleberry.com, too, which is your blog page, correct?
Yeah, you can see it there.
So, Joe, as we kind of wind down on our time here, put your coach's hat on and imagine that you're back speaking to a bunch of young aspiring CEOs and university presidents and leaders who are trying to get it right the first time. What recommendations would you give for folks who really want to build a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement, and maybe they're just getting started with it? You know, what should they look at? What should they do? What advice would you give them?
Well, I would advise people to understand the area of work they're in as deeply as possible. Understand why that area of work is important. Understand why that area of work is essential to human well-being. And if you can understand that, then you understand the moral purpose and value of your work. Once you start at that place, your next step is to build processes that express that moral value of the work. And if you can build processes that match the moral value of the work, then you'll have moral processes.
So give us a definition of the moral value of the work again. I mean, that's a great word, but to a lot of folks, it sounds like a religious platitude, but I know you well enough to know that this is real stuff. So tell us, what's the definition of the moral value of work?
Well, by the way, there's a great book that I read a few years ago called Moral Leadership that lays this out. It's a secular book. It's not a religious book. By Robert Coles, a psychologist at Harvard. Great book. But when I talk about the moral dimension of the work, that's really a way of talking about what's right. Why is this work right? Why is it the right thing to do? I mentioned a few minutes ago about Toyota building cars. Why is it right for Toyota to build cars? I guess a lot of people could say that cars pollute the environment and do all kinds of evil things like that, make lots of traffic. That's not the essence of what cars are about. I mean, the essence of cars is not to create pollution, right?
Exactly.
You know, the essence of automobiles is to get people from point A to point B.
Transportation.
Human prosperity, human well-being requires people to move. And it's basic nature of human life is you've got to get from here to there.
So
the economy can't work without movement.
So you're saying that for every job, there's a moral value, and that identifying what that moral value is a key to engagement and to high-performance culture.
Yeah, an exact equivalent of the question, what is the moral value of this work, is the question, why is it right to do this?
Yeah, that's a good, simple way to say it.
Yeah, why is this the right thing to do? And if you can't answer that question about your work, you haven't thought about it hard enough.
Yeah, well, if you look at the statistics, let's just say that this change initiative you've just gone through and your 7 points to change. The guys at Harvard who study this all the time and at the London Business School, both sides of the Atlantic with their collective studies and surveys have identified that, again, here's the 70% number again, 70% of all organizational change initiatives fail to deliver the desired defined results. And the most common cause is insufficient focus on people. And I think what you taught us today, Joe, is that it's all about people.
And let me say this about our change at Northwest.
Yes, say it.
I can't take credit for it at all. It's our people who've made the decision for things to be better. You know, it's the people that have made things better. If without the trust of our people, without them deciding, we're going to do what it takes to solve our problem here and to make this a happier place to be and a better place to be, we'd get nowhere. We'd get absolutely nowhere. And the change isn't about the quality of the leadership. It's about the quality of the people who've decided to change.
Sounds like you believe in your people, Joe.
Oh, absolutely. I have a great group of employees, great people. I've always liked them. You know, even when we were in that problem and the workplace wasn't happy, I've always liked the people that I work with. They're great people, smart people, good people. We're just in a bad way, that's all.
Well, it shows, Joe. You've been a wonderful guest. We're going to have you back again. Folks, be sure and get Joe's book. I am serious. This is a great book. It's one of those that you'll study and you'll chew on and you'll make changes and you'll go back and then you'll do it again. Tell us again the name of the book and where to get it, Joe.
Yeah, the book is Your Deepest Dream. It's published by NAV Press, and it's available on Amazon.com and all other booksellers, Walmart.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any online bookseller is selling it.
Your favorite online bookseller.
All righty.
I like them all.
Thank you.
I like everybody that sells my book.
There you go.
So do we.
There you go.
You know, our mission here on Biz Culture Matters is to help the good guys win, and you're doing a great job of it, Joe. So we're proud of you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on the show, and thanks for the good interview.
And the statistics are out there that nobody becomes a millionaire by selling books, so it's clearly about helping people.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not making any money on books, though.
That's right. That is absolutely right.
Well, the Amazon's who makes all the money on selling books.
You don't make a lot of money on electronic books, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, thank you, Joe. It's great having you on the show, and hopefully we'll get you back again.
Thanks. It'll be a pleasure.
All right, listeners, you've been listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180, your conversation station. You can catch this podcast up next week at excellentcultures.com. Also, email us, engage, ask the experts at excellentcultures.com. We'll be back next Wednesday. See you then.